Welcome to Therapized. Prepare to deep dive in the world of personal development, relationships, and transformative power of healing attachments. Yeah, that's right. We can heal our attachments. So today we have a very special guest on the show. She is the founder of Wear Software. She's a dating coach who's just had enough of the bullshit way of dating. And she is also the inspirational voice behind Do The Work podcast, which you need to check out. She also has a TikTok following of over 670K, and she has become a very prominent figure in the dating world. Her name is Sabrina Zohar, and she's with us on Therapized to join us to explore the intricate connection between personal growth, relationships, and just the courage that it takes to embrace your true vulnerable self. So in this episode, we will uncover the profound and transformative journey of healing attachments. So here we go. So hi, Sabrina. First of all, I just want to say thank you so much for being part of this. I really want to get your expertise on this sort of episode today, just so more people can understand about attachments, understand relationships, and understand love, which are three huge topics, but topics that you talk about. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I know that we've been planning this for a while. You were on Do The Work and you were on my podcast. So I'm excited that people now get to hear both sides of the coin between the two of us.
Definitely. And to be honest, your podcast, I want to first, let's just start there. Your podcast is called Do The Work. Can you tell us a little bit more about what Do The Work actually means?
For me, at least I grew up, I was like the poster child for anxious attachment style, like severe trauma from my childhood, daddy issues up the ass. Like it was just, it was for a long time me not understanding that my actions had a reaction and not understanding that the way I came off to people was ultimately going to determine how they then interacted with me. And so it was when my mom got sick a few years ago and I just kind of hit rock bottom at that point, went into a terrible narcissistic relationship. And when I got out of that is when I started therapy kind of for the first time of like actually investing in my mental health and saying, you know what, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I need to make a change. And that was when I started, quote unquote, doing the work for myself. And for me, the podcast kind of started within this whole realm because I felt like a lot of people, you know, as you know, being in the industry, a lot of people don't really know where to start. A lot of people have no idea what doing the work actually means. They think, oh, if I just like read a couple of books or listen to a podcast, like that's me doing something, right? Or, oh, if I just talk to somebody every day, that's going to help, right? And I think for me, doing the work is more of accumulation of things. It's more of getting in your body, understanding your thought processes, understanding where those thought processes came from, and being able to challenge your thoughts. Like it's a whole multitude of things. But for me, what it was undoing a narrative that I had created for so many years and undoing behavior that had been learned because it was no longer serving me. And so I think anytime I talk about really doing the work, what I'm really saying is like, take the flashlight to those parts of you that you have been so desperately trying to avoid for years of your life and make space for it, make a home for it, but don't allow it to live there. And I think by doing that, I've been able, at least for me and for anybody that I've worked with, I see that by understanding truly where these things came from, where this anxiety manifested from, and really being able to reparent that little you that nobody was able to really be there for, that has been such a game changer in doing the work for me personally. And I know that you kind of have similar journeys with your anxiety as well, with being high functioning anxiety.
Yeah, no, definitely. And when you talk about like doing the work, and you said you said something really beautiful there. You said shining the flashlight on the parts of you that you don't want to see. And sometimes when we're in a place where we don't want to see, we'll do anything to avoid. So when do you feel it was your when you had the courage, when you had the space or the capacity to start looking at these shadow parts of you?
Realistically, it kind of actually fell into my lap in a weird way. And I'll kind of explain what I mean. So when my mom got sick, it's when I started therapy, but it was me just kind of being like, okay, I'll just like do something, you know? And I the therapist I had, she was nice, but she just really didn't challenge me. She would just do the, okay, sorry to hear type stuff. So I wasn't really seeing a lot of growth and I was in a very toxic, incredibly toxic narcissistic relationship. I pretty much married my father. He was like almost the same. And when that relationship ended, I hit rock bottom. He broke up with me. He left me. It was like a whole thing. It was super traumatic. And then he lived with me for three additional months. Like I had been challenged, but I'm actually really grateful that that happened because what it allowed me to do was start to really realize, like I had to face things that I wasn't ready to face. I had to face the fact that I kept idealizing and hoping that this person was going to choose me and he was going to come back and he was going to be with me and he was going to save me. And every day that went by was that harsh reality of, oh my God, he's not. And I had found an incredible therapist that was really able to help me use tapping. And as she got me into journaling and we started meditating together, doing different modalities. And that was the first time I actually had ever seen little me. I had done a meditation and I called her and I was like, it's so weird. Me and my ex, I was like, we were kids and his mom came and it was a whole thing. And that was my first time understanding, oh, we connected as two children, not as two adults. That was kind of like the door that opened, because at that point, I was just so curious. I was so excited to learn. And all I kept thinking was, if I don't do this, my options aren't, oh, whatever, I'll just keep doing the same thing. I was like, I couldn't handle it. I was getting to a point where my depression was so severe because I was living a life that wasn't authentic to me, that I just physically couldn't continue on like that. And so really that... I hate to say it, but like pushing myself through a really tough relationship and having to see it for what it was and not for what I wanted it to be because he was there was really the catalyst for me to understand, holy shit, this isn't just about him. I play a part in this as well.
Yeah. And you understanding your patterns and what is this pattern that keeps coming up? And you mentioned about the relationship with your dad and you said that essentially you married dad. And you've also mentioned about the anxious attachment. Could you help people for those that are listening and don't understand what anxious attachment means? What is an anxious attachment?
So somebody with anxious attachment comes from a home where there's inconsistency. So like for me personally, I grew up with a narcissistic father and a people-pleasing mother. So what I saw all my life was if you go to get love, it's either not going to be given to you consistently. This person's in and out. They're not paying attention. So I always had to act out in order for them to pay attention to me. So as early as when I was... maybe I think I was like 5 or 6 months old. Like I was a baby and my mom said, you used to cry so much, you would throw up. And I recently said, Mom, what was happening? She said, you would throw up every night. And I said, what happened before? She said, you would cry until someone came in. And I said, so from that early of an age, I understood the only way I was going to get someone's attention was to act out, to leave myself and have to have somebody come and get me. So I grew up having a low sense of myself. I didn't trust myself. I didn't know myself. I was hypervigilant. I was constantly watching what was going on. My dad would use money to bait us. He would be in and out. He would cheat on my mom. He would abuse us. Like it was an incredibly toxic and unhealthy environment. And all I learned was there's something wrong with me. Every time I go for love to my father, he would hit me. Okay, so then I'm too much. My needs don't matter. I learned to put those away. And so how that manifested in my adult relationships was because I had so much unhealed trauma from my childhood and because I hadn't actually rectified or even processed what had happened, I was constantly trying to change my narrative of my core beliefs of, oh, I'm not good enough and I'm not worthy by dating people that mimicked my father. Because if I could get their love, well, then great, maybe my father would love me. But ultimately, all that did was continue to reaffirm those core beliefs until it got to the point where I was so anxious, I couldn't even sit still without waiting. I would stand and keep flashing my phone just to see if a text would come in because I was so anxious to just sit and be with myself because I didn't know how to.
Yeah. And even when you say that, like I come across loads of different people who talk about this anxious attachment that they have and that sometimes they're there and they haven't heard back from the guy who they're waiting for. They're currently sort of dating. And when they don't hear back, they have that sort of anxiety of like, oh, he hasn't got back to me and that sort of anxiety and the anger and the frustration. And I always say, I'm like, what does it feel like when there's no message there? And people will often say, it's like, what's wrong with me? What is wrong with me? And that comes back to the core belief that you've just mentioned there. And I'm wondering, like, from your perspective and your journey through life, do you feel you can change your core beliefs?
100%. Now, is it easy? So fucking lutely not. But I'm now, what I've learned as well is like our core beliefs. I used to only think that it was manifested in relationships. I was like, no, I'm just anxious in relationships. I'm fine everywhere else. Until now, what I've learned is like for me, my success that happened with the podcast and the TikToks and all of this stuff, that happened I never in my wildest dreams thought that this was going to happen. So I'm now, although I have a beautiful relationship that I still get triggered all the fucking time because I'm human, now I've noticed, wait a minute, my core beliefs are starting to flare up in my career because I could get 30,000 people saying they love me, but the one person that says they don't, now all of a sudden it's, I knew you weren't good enough. I knew that there was something wrong with you. You're always going to let people down. And that's one of those things of, it doesn't mean that I can't change that thought process. Yeah. All that means is I need to be aware of it so that I can then say, okay, wait, like you said, what's happening in my body? When have I felt this feeling before? Because more often than not, what I've seen is, especially people with anxious attachment, specifically avoidant, any of the insecure attachments, but that fear of abandonment in the anxious attacher of, they're going to leave me and they're going to abandon me and I'm never going to see them again. You don't get abandoned in adulthood. And it took me years to understand that that's something from my childhood. And those core beliefs that start to happen, that's the anxious brain. As we know, once you get into anxious brain, you're dysregulated. None of it makes any sense. All of a sudden you're attacking yourself because it feels familiar. It feels easier to say, well, it must be me, as opposed to, wait a minute, maybe for the first time, I don't have to believe that core belief. And I can actually say, I didn't do anything here. This other person acted really inappropriately. I don't need to own that.
Yeah. Because there's something there when you're speaking about boundaries and not understanding someone with an anxious attachment, not understanding boundaries or their worth in some ways. So if you think that in your eyes, it's like, I need this person to text me, because that's the validation of I'm enough. That's the validation of see, they've messaged me. That means there's nothing wrong with me. But when you then start to grow and you start to develop and you work on yourself and you do the work, as you put it, that's when you start to realize, actually, I am enough. And you start to show up in different ways. And like you said, we're human. So there's going to be times where naturally you put yourself in situations you are triggered. But it's like, how do you then respond in that situation when you are triggered? Because just that pause and that reflection of like, hang on, I need to regulate my nervous system now. Because when we're feeling dysregulated, it's like, oh my God, I need. And we don't know what we need. And that's where that pause is so important. And I wonder if that's what you've noticed as well, where just that clarity, gaining that clarity, having that pause can be really powerful for you.
For me, I would always react. I never responded. And so of taking that time, so meditation was really beautiful for me because that was one of the modalities I started with to be able to say, okay, a thought's going by, I don't have to attach to it. I don't have to live in it. I don't have to create a narrative for it. And it started to teach me, oh, thoughts can go by and I don't have to attach. And so that was kind of the first step for me. Then it was, but I think for so what I've really learned about, especially with anxious attachers when I work with them, it's not the fear of the outcome necessarily. Like, okay, so you had one date and this person doesn't text you. Okay, who gives a shit? Like, realistically, between us as adults, we're going, all right, so you had one date. You had a couple of dates. This person doesn't want to see you again. Move on with your life. What I find is it's more they're scared of the feeling. Scared of the feeling of, I'm going to be rejected and this is going to hurt. They're so scared because of that. And I understand it because as a child, it's so traumatic to go through that and it's so painful. But as an adult, that's when we have to stop and say, wait a minute. Okay, I'm so scared of this feeling, but what if, like you said, what if I sat with this feeling? What if I allowed?
What is that feeling, Sabrina, when we're talking about that feeling?
I think for everybody, it kind of manifests a little bit differently. For me personally, I get the feeling in my heart. It feels like somebody's choking my heart. Some people get a brick in their stomach. Some people have a ball in their chest. Some people feel like there's something sitting on their chest.
Yeah,
anxiety can manifest in so many different ways in our body. And I think by being able to stop. So like when I'm dysregulated, for years, I didn't know what I looked like dysregulated. I didn't even understand what that meant. Until now, I stopped to go, oh, wait a minute. When I get dysregulated, like in hindsight, after I kind of calm myself, my shoulders get tense. My heart starts to race. I get really clammy and my eyes start to dart. I know that's my first sign because I can't look at somebody and my eyes go back and forth really quickly. I can feel it. It's almost like this heat wave that comes over me. Because I'm so fucking aware of how that feels, I'm able to stop and go, oh, I'm dysregulated. I can bring myself back. But that took me like a year to figure out because for so long, I would just walk around being this ball of anxiety until I had to stop and say, okay, can I sit with this? Where is this happening? How is this happening? Can I sit with this emotion for 2 minutes to let it run its course and make space? Because for years I self-identified as I'm anxious. This is just who I am. Yeah. And it wasn't until my partner called me out and he goes, no, you're not going to self-identify. You have anxiety. You're not anxious. You can heal that anxiety. You can process through it and you can move on from it. That doesn't mean that that's who you are.
Yeah. And there's a part of you that like you said, with anxious anxiety, it's not a part of who you are, but it's a part of you ending up doing. And there's this pattern that you get stuck in. And it's like, I need to do. And we forget how to just be in our own bodies and notice how we be. And like, I can see your face now when you're hearing that. But is that how it felt for you, that it was hard for you to get from the doing into the being?
Oh my God. The hardest thing for me was receiving love. I was so, because chasing and running and going after somebody in the unavailable was also constantly reaffirming those beliefs. Yeah. It was keeping me triggered. It was keeping me on that high, the dopamine hit, the highs, the lows, the peaks, the valleys. Mm. And growing up with that, that felt familiar and safe. It wasn't until I met my partner currently who wanted to give me so much love, but not off the bat. It wasn't like he came in on a horse and was like showering me. He's actually somebody who's more avoidant. He's very secure, but he was, you know, in his past life was significantly more avoidant. And I, in my past life, significantly more anxious. Mm-hmm. And so for a long time, I just thought, no, I just need to find the right person. Then I found somebody who challenged me in a lot of ways, who really pushed certain aspects of me, of like the texting and certain components that I used to think were healthy and now have realized, oh, that's not how you build a healthy and secure relationship. Mm-hmm. And for me, not doing and just receiving is incredibly uncomfortable, because then I go, that high functioning anxiety in me go, but you're not doing enough. How dare you? And wait, no, you're not good enough, because if he loves you, that means you actually have to accept that you're good enough. That means you actually have to start receiving and go against those core beliefs. And that was really fucking hard for me, because it was easier to live.
What was it like receiving love and receiving love and really accepting that love for the first time?
It was very uncomfortable. I'll never forget the one time that stood out. We were on the couch watching a movie, maybe like 5 months into the relationship. It was still pretty new, but like enough to where it was like, this is my person. Like we're official. Like that's it. And I remember laying on, like just being on his chest and feeling so dysregulated, feeling so like quote unquote unsafe. And I literally stopped, and I remember sitting there for the moment, and I didn't include him in any of this. I really just processed through this. I shared it with him later on, but stopping and saying, what's happening for me? And all the thought that kept coming to me when I just tapped into my body was, I don't know what to do here. Okay. And that's when I became so, it hit me and I was like, oh my God, you've never felt safety before. You've never understood what it feels like to let somebody in. From that day on, our relationship has only improved, because I stopped living in the space of, I don't want to attach to him, and no, this person's going to hurt me, and I need to keep my distance. And I finally accepted, wait a minute, I trust myself that no matter what, I'll be okay. I know that my gut knows what's right. I am always, my mama has said that for years. I could think, I can talk, I can process. Like we talked even before we came alive about the company that I walked away from. I could think about it. I could talk about it for days. But when my gut makes the decision and I say, no, I'm done, or I can't do this, that's it. I'm very definitive. And so I started to trust my gut a lot more. And so now in our relationship, instead of me getting triggered and going, oh, well, you know, it's him, I have to stop and say, wait a minute, what's coming up for me? Because he didn't do anything. All he said was no. You're allowed to say no. What's happening for me? Oh, I took it as rejection. I'm able to process through that because I understand, wait a minute, I'm safe. This has never happened for me. I've never been with someone that can set beautiful boundaries.
And there's something there about when you're saying it's something safety, but also trusting him. And when, like you said in the past about the anxious attachment that you've had, it's that inconsistent parenting. So you've grown up and you're like, I don't know what mom's going to do. I don't know what dad's going to do. I don't know what's going to happen here. So always on edge, but not able to trust your caregivers. And we're not blaming caregivers, but we're understanding why you felt like, okay, I'm used to dysregulation. That's what I know. And then being with someone who's secure and sort of consistent, and it's like, what? I don't know how to be here. I don't know what the rules are for this. I don't know what to do in this situation. And it feels like that's what was going on for you.
100%. Because it's like my nervous system is sitting there being like, we have never had this before. I can't keep you safe here. Go back to what you know. And instead I had to really challenge myself and say, what I knew doesn't mean that it's right. And I see there's a lot of people, like a friend of mine just posted, he got a lot of comments from people saying, you know, and I get this all the time of like, no, I'm anxious. I just, you know what? I just haven't met the right person. And especially with the texting thing, for me, for years, I looked at it as if they text me, like we talked about earlier, if they text me, oh, they like me. Oh, I'm safe. Without understanding, texting has nothing to do with the fact that this person wants a relationship with you. It is, there is no correlation between just because this person texts you means that they want to be in a relationship, or if just because they don't for a day means that they don't like you. There are no correlations. Listen, a pattern is a different story. If we see somebody who is not showing up for you, not trying to see you, not trying to make plans with you, and not texting you, okay, well, I think we also know in general, this person's not interested. Yeah. But for me, I was really challenging beliefs that I had come accustomed to. Oh, well, if he texts me, my partner didn't really text me early on. And so that in and of itself felt super uncomfortable and felt really, I didn't really understand what that meant. And so my nervous system understood how to handle that. Then as I started to express myself and have communication and share things with him, I started to understand I'm safe to express myself. This person has created a safe space, and I have done that as well. I never judge him. I don't ridicule him. I don't talk down to him. We have had almost to the point of breakup conversations that have never resulted in raising our voices. We've never cursed at each other. I mean, I say fuck every other word, but you know what I mean? I've never said a negative. I've never called him a name and vice versa.
Because what do you think the difference is with this relationship compared to others? Apart from him being consistent and more secure in like being able to communicate? What else do you think it is that has allowed you to also come in, understand him, and him also understand you?
I think it's, for me, I of course, like you said, those, all of those components are incredible. But I think the difference here, because I've met secure men in my past, the difference here is that I'm responding and not reacting, that I have, growing up, I just wanted to be heard. I felt like nobody was listening to me. So I had to scream louder and I had to get someone's attention and I had to be defensive and I couldn't let anybody see me in a negative light. And when I started to date him and realize I could be humble, it's okay. Maybe I did fuck up and maybe I do need to take accountability. And you know what? It's not all about me. I'm not always right. And it was a lot of the work of me having to call myself out. And that's why I love to practice my, like my favorite kind of thing that I always do. Like when I say, what do I do the work when I get, when, like I said, so he'll tell me, I'll say, hey babe, do you want to go do this? Like Saturday, like I really want to do this. And he'll just say no. And so for me, the old me used to be like, well, what the fuck does that mean? What do you mean? No, you know what? That's so insensitive. Or I would shut down and be like, eh, and not say anything and not open up. And so now I've stopped and I'll say, okay, whew, that got me a little dysregulated. And I'll kind of just like move around, kind of regulate. And I'll stop. Okay, where was that in my body? Sit with it for a little. And then I'm like, huh, okay, what's the narrative that's starting to play? Mm-hmm. He said no, because he doesn't like me. And I'm like, let's put that on trial. We know that that's not accurate. I know that this person loves me to the moon and back. He has shown me consistently time and time and time and time and time again that he loves me. Yeah. And I think by what created this safety between the two of us was that I wasn't scared of losing him. And I think what I mean by that, I wasn't attaching to the outcome. I saw this as if I express myself and I lose this person, great, see you later. But if I hold it in and I keep this person, I'm doing myself a disservice and I'm self-abandoning. Yeah. And so we've now just learned this. We always say, we started off, if we are upset, hey, to avoid resentment, can I share something with you? Yeah. And we, at that point, we know time to disarm, time to shut your mouth and just say absolutely what's coming up for you and listen. That's been a game changer.
There's something there about self-awareness, isn't there? There's something there about you developing a level of self-awareness that you understand what is it that's going on here so you can respond. But in order to respond, you're understanding, hang on, I'm feeling and I'm noticing this, or he's just said no to me. And I don't like that because this is what's coming up for me. And the fact that you're able to understand that and then communicate that back without saying, how dare you say no to me? What do you mean no? Like that you can easily fall into that space because you're reacting because you don't understand. And I wonder, like, there's again, the dating world right now is people will jump on an app, they'll communicate, they'll be like, right, this person has a message back. Right, I'm just going to leave this person. They're not good, or they're toxic, or they're this, or they're that. But it's like you said, you spoke to your partner and tried to understand him, tried to understand his patterns. We're open to try and understand. And I wonder what advice you have for people who are currently dating, who do have an anxious attachment, and who do perhaps look at people and think, yep, yeah, okay, just put this to one side because I'm not interested in this because look at the way that they're communicating.
I think the biggest thing is when it comes to an anxious attachment style specifically, impatience is the number one thing. There is no patience. And like, I know that. Like when I first started dating my partner, he was a slower mover in the sense where like we saw each other twice a week. We didn't text a lot. He was not into it. And he was like, I don't want a digital relationship. I want to get to know you for who you are. But he was wildly consistent. Now in the beginning, I almost broke up with him after like a month because that was my anxious attachment being like, he's not right for you and he's not satisfying your needs. But then I had to really stop. And like you said, self-awareness is the first step. Without being aware, how the fuck are we going to do anything?
Exactly.
But I really had to challenge and say, okay, what I've been doing hasn't been working. The people, the way that I've been, I always say, like, I heard that some of this, I think it was a therapist, I think said it, I don't remember, but it was like, you can have a goal. That's fine. My goal is still that I'm in dating with intention and I want to be with somebody, but that just means we need to change the plan. The plan just needs to change how we go about getting the goal. The goal doesn't have to change. Yeah. And I started realizing that because the guy that I dated right before my partner, when my dog passed away, he was everything I'd said I wanted on paper. He was, you know, he was texting me every single morning, texting me every night. We had our cute little nicknames in our phone. We were spending every day together. I met his family really early on. He wanted to meet my friends and family after like 3 or 4 weeks. It was very love bomb-y. And I overlooked one very important red flag that ended up, like my brother always says, the issues you have in the beginning will ultimately be the challenges and what usually ends the relationship. He said something to me at dinner that I overlooked. I didn't overlook it. I remember it, but I said, how'd your last relationship end and what did it teach you about yourself? And he said, oh, I've never had a relationship. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I get bored after 2 months. For some reason, I'll date someone, I'll be really into them for 2 months. And then, and he was in his mid-30s. And I kept asking, and I would see things, like I remember seeing things in his apartment going, where's this from? Oh, it was the girl I dated before you. And then seeing her and I was like, her? Like, she's so not your type. Yeah, she was like an alcoholic, all of these things. And I'm like, but yet you like put up with it. Yeah, but then I got bored after 2 months. And it was his pattern. And sure enough, he was doing all the things and he was texting me. And at that 2 month mark, all of a sudden he started coming up with excuses and doing the whole schmigate. It was the whole thing. And so what after
what
that
do to your anxious attachment at the time? Like when someone's, you're so like involved in someone's life. And then all of a sudden they've sort of like disconnected slowly. They're removing themselves. And your anxious attachment is like, oh, and you can feel them moving. But I wonder what does that do or what did that do for your attachment?
At the time, because I had been doing so much work on myself at this time, it didn't have as much an effect to me. Talk to me 2 years prior, I would be literally like having panic attacks, like crying hysterically in my house because that was it. I was going to be left. Whereas this one, I just kept going, all right, well, we need to have a conversation. Something's up here. Like anytime something would arise. And I think also what the reason that this was magnified was because my dog passed away at that time unexpectedly. He went to the doctor and all of a sudden he had kidney failure and he passed in 10 days. And so that's when my, like after he passed and I realized how this guy wasn't showing up, it was just this big light bulb that went off where I was like, what the fuck am I even here? Look, what am I doing? I am wasting my time on frivolity. Because Clem, if he taught me anything, it's that for years I attached myself to him was if I don't have him in my life, I can't go on. Like I literally would have panic attacks when I'd be like, but no, he has to live forever. Like my dog can't die. Like this is my best friend. Like we're thick as thieves. Where you see me, you see him. And so when he passed away, I lost my identity. I like didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I was doing. I kind of just was a shell of a human. And that's when it hit me. I can't attach to the outcome of people. I can't attach that my life is contingent if you're in it. Because at the end of the day, I lost the most important thing except for my mom in my entire life. And I had to go on. And so that's when I broke up with the guy right after. He had made some bullshit excuses. He didn't come to the dog. He didn't come see me after Clem passed. He was super aloof. And I just said, I'm done. And I walked out and I cried. It sucked. It felt like shit. And then I met my boyfriend 5 days later because I made space. I was no longer, I didn't attack myself when it happened. I didn't go, oh, here we go again. I just said, this sucks. It feels like shit. But I know that this guy has his issues. This has nothing to do with me. And I'm going to remove myself because I acted in a way that I was proud of. I didn't attack myself because I knew I did.
You made that choice. You made that choice that I'm not going to put up with this. This is not okay. And that's a really big choice to make from someone who is like chasing the crumbs or chasing any form of like, do you still like me or am I good enough? To wait. And that's a really proud moment as well, because like you said, you made space, you cleared this space. So in came this partner that you're with now who's secure, who's consistent. But if you didn't do that, that's the pattern then that continues. But it's that courage, the vulnerability to be able to make that choice, but to trust yourself in that moment that this is the right choice. I don't feel that this is right for me. So I'm going to step away. And like you said, it hurts. It hurts. It can bring up lots of different emotions, doubt, fear, worry, vulnerability. But you went along with that. So by you going along and you trusting yourself, do you think that was because of the work that you'd been doing?
100%. Because I think for so long, I think if you don't trust yourself, no matter what, I don't care who comes into your life, you won't be able to identify what's going on. And I think the biggest things that I see when I'm working with anybody with anxious attachment is there's this lack of understanding that we have as much control as the other person. Everything is, well, when are they going to make the decision? And when are, like, I have it all the time. So I want to be official with them. How long do I have to wait for them to ask me? And it's like, I'm sorry. Why is everything up to the other person? Yeah. I don't need to live in a space where someone else dictates what my life is going to look like. So if I'm dating somebody and I go and have this and I want to have a conversation of exclusivity, if the verbiage that's coming out is I'm scared I'm going to lose them, it's like, oh, you're scared that you think you're a child speaking up to your parents who are going to walk out. Because if you're scared to open up and have a conversation with somebody because you're scared to lose them, I hate to be the bearer of bad news. You don't have anything you're holding on to. You're holding on to the idea of them and the fantasy. Because I've had more conversations than I'd probably like to have with my partner. And I think that's also another thing is like, communication is literally, as you know, the cornerstone of relationships. Yeah. Like you have to, my partner says, we're just one giant conversation. It's just always communicating. Hey, he'll sometimes ask me, do you feel seen, heard, and understood? Can I support you in any ways? Are you okay? Just to touch base. Yeah. And I think the anxious attacher is so scared because growing up, we would get, you know, reprimanded or abandoned or left, or our parents might act in a certain way. Our caregivers weren't able to attune to our needs. So we learned, okay, I'm too much. So just keep it in. But unfortunately, those coping mechanisms in childhood are the challenges you're facing in adulthood. And so by not speaking up and by not trusting yourself, but that's why I also like, I process, I sit with the emotions before I go to him for anything. I spend like 20, 30 minutes by myself and I just go back and forth in my head. I'll call my friend who's my coach and we'll just go over it for a little bit because I say, I knew that this was my gut. I just wanted to articulate it a bit better so that I know when I'm going to him, it's never, you said this and you are an asshole and you're a fucking dick. It's, hey, I want to share something with you. When you said this, I felt really triggered. I felt like you didn't want to love me. I felt like you were dismissive of me and I felt very small. Moving forward, I'd love if you, my partner said, calm down. We all know that that's never going to work. And I just looked at him and said, I ask you next time to use a different word because it's incredibly triggering for me. And he said, you know what? You're right. How would regulate be? And I said, that's great. Regulate is. So now when I get upset, he'll just go, babe, regulate. It's okay. Come back with me.
And look how safe that is, but also the personal responsibility there. You're taking that personal responsibility that I am feeling this when you're doing this, not you're doing this to me. And that's why I'm feeling like, it's like, no, when you did this, I noticed this coming up in me. What's going on? What's happening here? And it's almost like there's personal responsibility. But you also mentioned your inner child. You mentioned that a few times. And I love working with the inner child. And I know we've had a conversation on your podcast all about this. But when we talk about the inner child and we talk about the anxiety of the inner child, what do you mean by that?
So for, at least for me, like my inner child work and I kind of anybody, it's like, so as you know, when we're talking about the inner child, it's like we said, we're never trying to villainize our parents. We're never trying to, we can't change anything that happened. All I do with inner child work is I'm trying to understand, where did you learn this behavior from? Where did this come from? So for me, my sister once asked me, and that's where it all started. I said, you know what, Jamie, I always felt like I was too much. And she looked at me one day and she said, where'd you learn that from? And I hit me and I was like, Dad taught me that. I said, because growing up, he would hit us. He would slap us when you'd have an emotion or he'd leave. So I learned I'm too much. And so by understanding, okay, so for instance, if I'm dating somebody and I feel like I get this every day when people ask a question and I want to say something, but I don't want to be too much. I don't want to come off as this and I don't want him to think I'm too needy. What that tells me is if I hear too much, too needy, too this, too that, that's a core belief. That's a childhood thing. That has nothing to do with where we are right now. That I can already see. So what I see here is, okay, so then if we're going to sit in our bodies and we're going to try to feel this, my next step is, when do I remember feeling this? What's the earliest age I ever remember feeling this? More often than not, usually people start with, and I'm sure you see this all the time, I had a perfect childhood. There was no issues. No, my parents were great. And then when I'll just say, okay, so when do you remember feeling this? I'll say, oh, when my first relationship, and I'm like, earlier, they'll say, well, you know what, now that you mention it, when I was 8, I used to get really anxious. Why? Yeah. What would happen? Well, yeah, I realized, you know, my parents worked a lot, and it's like, thank you, there it is. It's not that, it's not the big T's. I'm not saying that you had to have been hurt, neglected, abused, things like that. God forbid, I hope that that wasn't your reality. But the little T's add up. The little T's of, my parents were dismissive. My parents were perfectionists. They only gave me accolades if I did well. So I learned I have to do better. Yeah. By doing that inner child work, by understanding, okay, like for me, the scarcity with money that I have has been since I was a child. I've always been scared. And so now as an adult, even though my business is doing well, every day I'm scared. Every day I'm going, but what if I don't get more? What if it doesn't happen? What if I lose it all? So by me having to do inner child work, I said, oh, okay, I learned that behavior when I was about 8 or 9 and I saw my dad leave and I had to go back and I meditated on it and I went to see her. And not only did I just sit with her, I then said, you know what? I'm here to save you. No one's going to come and do this. Come with me. And I took her and I told my dad to fuck off and I pushed the door open and I created a safe space for her. So that way, anytime I felt that anxiety, I was like, oops, she's back in the room. I would go and say, no, you're safe. I am here now. And I gave her the love. I told her, I love you and I choose you. You're not too much. You're just enough. I told her everything that wasn't told to me when I was a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you say, or when you're just thinking about your inner child and you're thinking about offering the love that she never got, the love that perhaps mom and dad and other caregivers weren't able to give her, it's almost like we took the belief that she was too much. And as a result, she shut herself down. She like almost like just dimmed her light down, thinking I need to give them what they want in order to receive love. And it feels like that became the pattern in your life, is that I need to just make sure that I'm enough for people and I better not be too much. So let me just become hypervigilant and watch what they're doing, what they're saying and how I now need to behave. Because if I go over that mark, I might be too much for them and then they're going to leave me. Just like with mom, dad, they shouted or they did whatever they did. They slapped me. They tore me off when I showed an emotion. So I better not show emotions. So there's that timid, anxious little girl who's constantly on the lookout. And it feels like that's how, well, that's the same girl that entered all these different relations continued that pattern until you did the work and you took accountability and you were like, right, no one else is here to save you. I have to do this. But I wonder, before that, do you think that she was waiting for someone else to come and save her? Do you think that's what she was waiting for?
I think she's always been waiting for me. I just didn't know that. I would self-abandon. Yeah. And she, like, I was, I'm like, fear of abandonment, I'm like, it's not that they're going to abandon you. It's that you're going to abandon you. She's scared that you're going to leave her. That's where all those protective parts start to come in and we start to act in different ways. But prior to that, I was so terrified that every person was just going to leave me and I was never going to be good enough. And it wasn't until I finally had to see her at the stages of when I was bullied. I mean, I was bullied so much when I was a kid. I was always just different. I was just... It's part and hard for me because my success has been because I'm different. And now that's been hard for me. And sometimes I even like will go back to her and I'm like, look, no, people love us for this. Like, yeah, and for me, it wasn't about when I say I accepted myself, it wasn't like the self-love I gave wasn't like bubble bath. And it also wasn't a cop out. It wasn't, well, I'm a big personality and that's what you're going to get. What I realized was taking the anxiety out of it. Yeah, I am a big personality. I have a lot to say. I'm very direct. I'm very blunt. That actually is who I am. I'm not trying to hide behind that. I'm not trying to say, it's an excuse for me to be rude. It's like, no, I'm just very to the point. And so for so long, I wanted to dim that down because people were getting uncomfortable until I realized, wait a minute, I'm not here to dim my light so that yours shines brighter. I'm here to clean mine off so I shine as brightly and I can pave the way for other people that want to join me on this walk. If it's too bright for you, no worries. Go find another path.
Yeah,
and that was that acceptance that I had to give within myself of, yeah, for years I thought I was too much and for years I thought I was fucked up and for years I thought there was something wrong with me and no one was ever going to love me and I'm damaged goods. And I used to tell my mom that. I'd be like, you made damaged goods. And she was like, I don't make damaged products, Sasa. And now I realized, even sometimes when I'll explode on my partner, like yesterday we had a thing and I stopped and I said, I'm so sorry. I did not mean to take that. I was like, the call I had before you was this and I apologize. Yeah. Like you came in at the wrong time. Just being able to stop and say that, I look back and I'm like, that's me looking at her saying, don't worry, I've got your back. Yeah. I'm here to take care of you.
Yeah. And there's something really powerful you've said there is that there's this imperfect being. Like, it's okay. Even when we think about healing attachments, even if we think of going in or stepping into a more secure space, there's going to be times where you slip up. There's going to be times where we're triggered, where things happen. And it's not beating yourself up or beating your little girl up and thinking, what are you doing? Like, you're too much. Get back in there. Look what you've just done. You've just made him really upset. It's like, no, let me take this ownership and say, look, I'm really sorry about what just happened there. This is why, or I've reflected on this and this is what's happened. So the other person understands. And obviously if it keeps continuing that way, then we need to look at that trigger and what's going on and what keeps coming up for you. So you, again, do the work to try and understand what is happening. But I think it's important to let people know that it can happen. You can slip up because you're doing the work doesn't mean you're going to be perfect and everything's going to go perfectly fine after that, if that makes sense.
Because there's no such thing as being healed. Like, are you fucking kidding me? I could do, it's like this, I hear it all the time. My friend was saying it the other day. He's like, man, I've been doing so much work on myself. He's like, years of work on myself, single. And he's like, and then I got into a relationship and he's like, I have never been so triggered. And, you know, you could start to see like his disorganized started to come out like as he was talking and we're just sitting there, I'm like, I get it. A relationship is just going to be it's like having kids. It's just a bigger trigger. It's going to constantly mirror all of those things. And now instead of me turning away, I get excited. I get curious, not like, oh yeah, I can't wait for this to happen. But for in a way of like, I look back at myself about 6 months ago when I used to get like a troll comment on TikTok, I would like lose my shit. I would get so dysregulated. I would cry. I would hide. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Now but what ended up happening was I befriended my nervous system. I had to say, okay, well, let's go deeper. It's not just, oh, they're being mean. No, what's happening is this is triggering my core belief of, see, I knew you weren't good enough. I knew that you were fucked up. I knew that people were going to find you out. I knew that you're a loser. And so me working through this, I had to say, okay, well, people are allowed to have their own opinions. That doesn't mean that that's anything. You know, on the contrary, they look really stupid when you start to look through those comments. And then I started to befriend my nervous system as opposed to getting mad. And when I'd get dysregulated, instead of like, oh, Jesus Christ, here we go again, it was, okay, hey, welcome. You're here. It's good to have you. You're not here for long, but I'll allow you to stay. Now it's gotten to the point where when I see a comment, I laugh, I block, and I move on with my day because I'm no longer scared of the feeling that comes from it because I felt it, I processed it, and that's the same with triggers in a relationship. Yeah. It's not as bad. It gets better, but oh, fuck, you're going to be triggered a lot when you get into a relationship.
And I think that's the thing. People think, oh, once I get into a relationship, everything's going to be perfect. Once I find that perfect person, everything should be going smoothly and perfectly. And that's not the case. Like, you have to get to know the other person. And I know that you're a dating coach and you speak about this and you help people through this. And I suppose, what's the best advice that you can give someone who is dating, who is getting to know someone? What would you say to them, to do?
A couple of things. One, okay, actually, there's a few things.
Okay, go for it.
Depending on the environment of where you met them, stop engaging in digital relationships. I know, I get it. It's 2023, we all have our phone, but that doesn't mean that just because someone has their phone that they owe you something. And I think with dating, what I've learned, and I was talking to, I don't know if you know Dr. Stan Tatkin. So he and I, he's great. And we were talking, and he was like, I have never seen so much entitlement nowadays. And it's like, there is this entitlement of, no, I'm owed that. No, you went on a date with me, you owe me something. And it's like, here's what we need to learn. You need to humble the fuck down. Nobody owes you anything. There are no commitments. Nobody has a guarantee. And the biggest thing I see is stop attaching to the outcome. Sure, you had a great date, but you know what I remind myself after a great first date, second date, third date? I was good before them, I'll be good after. If this works out, great. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. I love my life. I'm building it. My mama has been saying this to me since I was a kid. They are an addition to your life, not instead of. And so when you're dating, understand it's an inorganic amount of people on an app that you're going to be meeting. That doesn't mean that everybody's going to work out. That doesn't mean everybody wants the same thing as you. And I think when we enter with rigidity of, well, I want a relationship and I don't want my time wasted and you're wasting my time and you're stringing me along. What happens is trying to control the outcome so much removes the magic. It removes, like for me, I slept with my boyfriend on the first date. And the reason this all worked out was because when I went home, I went, I'm probably never going to see this guy again. I was like, he doesn't owe me anything. I'm like, I'm a woman. I had needs. I had a good time, great sex. We had a good time. And so then when he asked me out again, I was like, oh, okay, sure. Just getting to know this guy. We went really slow. We really spent time together. We didn't engage in digital stuff. And I was always checking in with, how do I feel when I'm with him? Do I feel seen, heard, and understood? Do I feel safe with this person? Is he being consistent? Yes. Is he being reciprocal? Yes. Is he showing up for me? Yes. That's always like, I want anybody that's dating right now to take the power back. It's not about, do they like me? It's about, how do I feel when I'm with this person? And is this something I even want to explore further?
Yeah. And also the power, the thing that you've mentioned over and over again today is around, don't attach to the outcome. Because it's so easy, isn't it, to run off in your head, start thinking, oh, when they meet my family, or when we get married, or when we do this, and you now have an attachment with this person that they don't even know of. So when
No.
they're not messaging you back, you're like, how dare they not message me back? Because you're coming from a place of this imaginative, like this world that you've created that isn't reality. So of course you're going to be feeling anxious, annoyed, frustrated. So I think it's about, like you said, coming back into yourself, understanding, where have I run off to in my head? Where have I gone to in this relationship? And what's the reality? We've had one date. He doesn't owe me that. I need to be messaging every single night, every single day. And if I don't get a good night message, that's it. He's gone because he's not consistent. We need to also communicate that across and say, hey, I've noticed this, or this is what's going on for me, or this is what is important to me in a relationship. But it's that communication is so powerful as well, is being able to speak out how you're feeling, and that's doing your own work. So it really feels so important to be able to do all of these things to be able to have a relationship, but doesn't mean your relationship's going to be perfect, because that doesn't exist either.
No, 100%. And it's like, at the end of the day, if you're seeing a pattern, oh, I keep dating avoidance, I keep dating emotionally unavailable people. It's like, yeah, no, trust me, that's not by accident. It's not because every single person's an avoidant. The reality is, though, once you start to do the work, you get tools so that when you meet these people, you're going, oh, hey, okay, because like I have like a few questions. People always ask, what are great first date questions? And I'm like, oh, you're probably not going to like these because they're of depth. They're everything I asked my partner. And you know what's so funny? When I asked him, I said, what did you like so much better first date? And he said, the questions you asked. He was like, you were different. He was like, women didn't ask this to me. And it showed me, he was like, holy shit, she's got depth to her. This is what I've been looking for. And so for me, I'm like, if you want that depth, if you want to have it to where you and your partner are just so fucking connected, and it's not going to be connected 24/7. We go in and out of connection. It's not like sometimes my partner and I feel very disconnected, and sometimes we feel like we're one person. But understanding that that's normal, that's going to fluctuate, but also knowing that, like, I don't even remember where I was going with this, but knowing that this is what happens. Sometimes I'll be in such a great thought and I'm like, yep, there it is. But just understanding that, like, communication is how you build that connection.
Definitely. And when we talk about communication as well, it's like it's not just text, because when you're reading a text message, hey babe, how are you, it's like you're reading it in one way, but someone else could be sending it in another way. And I think that's where it's like you're not having like a digital relationship, it's meet up in real life, really connect with one another. And also don't be afraid of sharing questions, because I also hear that a lot, is people will say, but I don't want to ask him that, I don't want to scare him away. And I'm like, but you're not being your real authentic self, you're worried about what is he going to think, or I better not say that because he's not going to want to meet me again. And it's like, show up as yourself and see what happens. And if the person accepts you for you, then you already have saved yourself many, many dates later where you are trying to be yourself.
Yeah, that's why when people get so scared of like, how'd your last relationship and when did it teach you about yourself? Yeah. Like, what are your intentions with dating? Do you have a bandwidth for a relationship? Do you want marriage and kids? I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm in my 30s. I know that I have a clock. Like, let's not pretend that women just have all the time in the world. And I think one girl got upset with me. She was like, I can't believe you're saying women have to do it in a certain time. I was like, no. If you want a child, I don't know who you want to, why are you fighting me? Fight biology. Okay, I can't control this. But I think I look at it and it's like some of these people will meet on an app and say, oh, I'm going to spend 2 months talking to them. And I'm like, whoa. There was a dating coach actually saying, go 3 months without kissing. And I said, so I'm sorry, you want me to spend 3 months to not explore that physicality is part of a relationship. So what? I can then waste my time and date 4 people a year as opposed to instead of trying to make myself smaller or, ooh, I want to people please. Ooh, I have to make them feel comfortable. Instead it's, well, I have needs. My needs matter. What I want matters. And it's okay to look at somebody and say, hey, you're great and I'm great. We're just not compatible. But that I think is the biggest fear, because when you come from scarcity mindset is, oh, when am I going to meet someone else? It's like, my grandma's been saying this for years, I'd rather be alone than in bad company. Yeah. So I'd much rather be with somebody that I'm authentically myself versus every single time you're walking on eggshells or wondering when you can say something or you're scared you're going to lose them. It's like, if you're scared you're going to lose them, you don't have anything.
And I think there's something really beautiful that you said and that you're sort of like heading to, is being yourself is also, everyone's very different. So being yourself, like for example, you might need 30 minutes to just sit back and really sit with yourself and journal. For someone else, it might just need 5 minutes. For someone else, it might need to go for a walk. So it's also trying to understand yourself and not comparing yourself, thinking I need to go in and ask all these depth questions. But if that's not your style, if that's not the way that you want to be, it's also maybe that's your second date, maybe that's your third date. But it's also you being real and authentic to you, rather than thinking I better be this, or I better be this, or this is how I need to overcome my anxious attachment. I think it's really just going, like you said, deeper within yourself and understanding what is it that's going on. But I really love the fact that you've just been really open and honest about your experiences and how you've healed your attachment. But also, like you said, healing is not an end goal. There's no real like end. It's always work in progress. And things will come up. Like he might not message you one day because he's busy at work and you're like, whoa, what's this going on for me here? And it's sitting with that and really trying to understand what's going on there for you, which is beautiful.
100%. And I think the last thing I'll kind of leave it at too is also understanding that not everyone's going to do things like you do. So like I have a client and she gets so upset with like, but I called him and he didn't call me. And I'm like, but just because you act in a way doesn't mean that they do. And I think that's for anxious and same with pretty much any of the insecures. It's easy to see that because you're like, oop, a problem. Great. I can run. Yeah. And it's like, no, stop trying to self-protect and instead try to open our eyes and say, hey, everyone's going to react differently. You may need 30 minutes to journal. I don't need any time. That doesn't mean I'm right or you're wrong. That just means that I also need to attune to my partner's needs. It's not just about me.
Definitely. And I think that's really beautifully said. And if people want to get in contact with you, because you are a dating coach and you do specialize in all of this, how do people get in contact with you?
So you can find me on TikTok or Instagram at Sabrina.Zohar or Do The Work Podcast on Instagram. There's links in all of those if you want to work with me one-on-one or, you know, ask a question, whatever works, or just to listen to the podcast. You can listen to Lilita's episode. I think it's episode 24, if I'm not mistaken. I think so. Yeah. I'm like, I can't remember the numbers anymore.
And 24 rings a bell. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I was like, that sounds right. But yeah, Do The Work Podcast is where you can find even more and learn more about me. And if you want to work with me directly, just the link.
And I can vouch, you need to listen to the podcast. I send it to everyone who's dating, who comes to see me. I'm like, right, you need to listen to this podcast. It's a great podcast because I just think you just get straight to the point. There's no airy-fairy. It's just like, this is what you need to do. This is what needs to happen. And that's something that I really appreciate you sharing with the world because it's needed. And just as a final thing, I tend to ask people, which you have no idea that I do this. So you're going to be like, oh my God, what is she going to ask? But I have a question which I always share with guests at the end, and that is, do you think that life is fair?
Oh, that's a good question. Do I think life is fair? No, is my first response. And the reason I kind of say that is because fair is an ode to us. It doesn't have to be fair. There is times where, you know, like my sister unfortunately just went through a miscarriage. And it's like, was that fair? No. Yeah. But was that life? Yeah. She wasn't owed that. And so I think for me, I don't think it's fair, but I do think it's what we have. And so if I'm going to look at it as, oh, this is not fair to me, well, that sounds like I'm being entitled as if I'm owed something. So instead, how I look at it as is like, all right, well, the challenges are coming my way. I better just keep getting my armor and my stuff ready so that I can get my toolbox even stronger so that I can handle it, because there might be things that are unfair that happen. Doesn't mean I'm excluded from it.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you very much. That's a really powerful question that I always ask everyone, and I love everyone's response. But I know we're short for time, so I'm going to end it there. And just to say thank you so much. I'm really, really grateful that you've made time and you were able to be here with us. I'm going to share all your links with everyone on the bottom of this podcast. And if anyone wants to get in contact with Sabrina, please do. She is amazing. And thank you for listening. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Thank you for having me.